flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
When I look at this year specifically, I am proud of our guys and accomplishing what we accomplished this year to win a division, to get into the playoffs, right, get to the divisional round. I'm proud of our guys for that. But for me as a coach, as a competitor, that's not what I put all the work in for, is just to get to the divisional round and just be excited about that just because of where the Texans were before. I'm just supposed to be pleased or get into the divisional round. That's not why I work. Like, I work to win, and we didn't get the job done. We didn't make enough plays to win the game to get over the hump. So for me, it's like good year, but not good enough in my mind. And for me, it's how do we take the organization to new heights? So I'm looking at all areas to improve our football team.
I definitely thought, as much as D'Amico Ryan's tone overall really doesn't change a lot during the year, you know, he's pretty even keeled. You could sense, I thought, Seth, you could sense after the Kansas City game, both right after the game, the multiple appearances he did the next day, both on his coach's show and certainly in the press conference on Monday, there's definitely a level of frustration, I think, that D'Amico had. Like, it was, you knew there was going to be change afoot in some ways. When he walks into the press conference on Monday and preemptively says, hold off on any questions about staff and players. I'm still thinking about those. I'm paraphrasing, but I'm still thinking about those things. Maybe later in the week. You knew something was coming down, you know?
Right. Yeah, there was going to be, at the very least, what I hoped for was that you never know what's going on in the building, but there was something systemically off about the offense and the way that it operated this year, that there needed to be some kind of change. Whether it drastic from the outside or drastic from the inside, either with an infusion of brain power or by the ejection of an offensive line coach or an offensive coordinator. Turns out it was both. Chris Childs just reportedly was considering retirement before last season, which gives me the cold pricklies all over the place anyway, retroactively. We had like a grudging... We had a grudgingly employed offensive coordinator or offensive line coach. But then, yeah, you move Bobby Slowick, and it's going to be a completely new look next year. Even if it's somebody from the Kubiak-Shanahan tree, they're going to have their own version of it. And we'll see. So I'm feeling way more optimistic just because it can't possibly be worse than it was last year, because the offensive line was atrocious and CJ underperformed for multiple different reasons. And I don't. I think that was the basement last year. Yeah. Offensively, I think that or the floor. That was the floor offensively.
Yeah. So it would be interesting to know. You know, did CJ find out with the rest of us? Did CJ know this was coming? Did they talk to CJ beforehand? Here was CJ Stroud just moments before D'Amico Ryans met with the media on Monday. CJ Stroud had a press conference and talked about hard conversations that needed to be had.
Yeah, it's not just today. You know, it's not just this week. It's over time, and most of them are individual, and some of them are as a collective. For me, you know, it's my job to be honest and my job to be transparent, and that's what I feel like I'll do, you know, throughout this time and, you know, with free agency and draft and everything. If my opinion is asked, I'm going to give it, like it or not. So, yeah, and I think I would like that same type of honesty back to myself, because, you know, with that comes clarity and it comes just clear communication and transparency. So, it'll be over time, but I definitely think today was the start of that, and, you know, we'll continue to have conversations, and, you know, and it's a healthy thing. It's not a bad thing, you know. It's really healthy to have those type of conversations, and even if they turn into, you know, things where it's confrontation or whatever, you know, that's necessary. We're all men in here mostly, and you figure it out, and you know, and we all got love for another. You spend years with guys, or you spend a whole year with somebody, you'll learn to like them and learn to have things to like about them. So, yeah.
So, you know, just like an arranged marriage, you learn over time to, okay, I appreciate this person, and yeah. I'm bound by my religion not to leave this person. So you make the best of it. That's how I reinterpret that now, that you make the best of it. You learned, I've learned to like Bobby over these last couple years, despite all of his flaws and the fact that he's not my dream spouse.
Right. No, I'm sure he's a good guy, you know, but he was not calling a great offense this year. And so that was CJ. You know, like some of these things, you know, some of these cuts from Monday, you go back and listen to them retroactively now, you're like, oh yeah, that was a sign, and that was a sign, and there's a sign that this was coming down the pipe. I'll tell you my biggest thing that I was encouraged by in all this, because until we see who the replacement is, I'm not going to get encouraged about what the offense is going to look like fully until I see who the replacement is. Other than I think it's gonna be hard for it not to be an improvement.
Yeah.
My biggest thing is something you had brought up, Seth, during the season. Like, you know, D'Amico Ryan's first year was a honeymoon year. They overachieved every expectation in the books. Nobody expected them to be in the postseason, to win the division, to win a playoff game, etc., to look as good as they did. So there was really no change anyone was clamoring for. This year, people were clamoring for change.
Yeah.
A month into the season, almost, when it came to the offense. So the question was, can D'Amico Ryans fire his friends? You know, is he what I like to call, is he a wartime head coach?
Right.
He proved to me that he was on Friday.
I guess unless the other dynamic might be, okay, would the McNairs have stepped in and demanded it? I would be surprised if that were the case, just because I think Cal very much tries to be hands-off of the football people and let them do their work. So until it comes time to fire a GM, I would be surprised. I know that speculation is out there. It's impossible. We will likely never know. There will be rumors, and at some point, some version of the story will be written as fact on message boards and what have you, but I would be surprised if it were actually a heavy-handed move by the owner at this point.
I'd be shocked if it were a heavy-handed move. I'd be equally shocked if both Cal and Hannah didn't give their opinion on this.
Yeah. You know, oh, yeah, for sure.
Give their input.
When it comes to CJ's input in it, it gets dicey with a quarterback, because you never want to put a quarterback. That's got to be something that comes from the quarterback himself. You, as a coach or as a GM, don't want to put your quarterback into an uncomfortable position of talking smack about the offensive coordinator or somebody else, because then it opens the door to a lot of maybe undue pressure on the quarterback himself as far as being one of the guys or whatever. So it's dicey. It gets complicated. I think that more times than not, it probably ends up being a little bit of a read between the lines type of scenario. Hey, CJ, what do you think we could have done differently this year? How do you feel like maybe we should have handled things like that without ever directly mentioning the elephant in the room?
Yeah. I thought about this weekend, too, is there had to be a big part of D'Amico Ryans and his love of coaching is developing guys. developing players, and I know developing them as people for sure, he talks about that, but certainly like developing players. You look at that defensive side of the ball, and it's hard to find any underachievers. You know, like it's everybody seems to be achieving either at or well above the level they were viewed at during draft time or when they came in as a free agent. You know, the journeymen were all performing above journeyman levels.
Yeah.
The day three picks, guys like Henry Toa, guys like that, performing above their level. You know, Kalen Bullock, a third rounder, Kamari Lassiter, a second rounder, basically all rookie level guys. On that side of the ball, it's all buttoned down. There had to be something about DeMeco, because ultimately as a head coach, he's responsible for the development of all of it, right?
Yeah.
There had to be part of him that was seething this year about just the lack of development or lack of progress. Even veteran guys, you know what I mean? That Dalton Schultz is taking a massive step backwards in year two as a Texan. You know, that young offensive linemen are going nowhere right now. You know?
Yeah, that you're taking steps backwards, that the difference in... I think the way you framed it is exactly right. You're getting the most out of the defensive guys. You've got guys like Mario Edwards or Foley Fatukasi that were not marquee guys whatsoever, but I think we're playing better than you might have expected to just looking at them on paper or in, you know, on the film of their previous destinations.
Yep.
And yet you had very, very little of that on offense. I mean, who are the guys on offense that you might say, wow, he's better than I thought he was going to be? Was there a single one?
Okay, that's a great question, because we knew Nico was good. I'll say this. Joe Mixon was better than I thought he would be this year. And I knew he was good.
Yeah.
I didn't think Joe Mixon was... I mean, Joe Mixon ran for 1,000 yards, and he missed a quarter of the season. You know?
Except that part of that is that, yes, statistically it looked great, but we still had him getting hit in the backfield more than any other running back in the league. So I think, for me, it was, okay... I feel like it's cool that Joe Mixon is still running like a young guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, he made something out of nothing. It wasn't a surprise to me. It didn't look like, oh wow, that's better than he's ever played before.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, that's a fair way to put it. Like who was there anybody, cuz there were several guys on defense, I'm like, "Wow, this guy's really good. Way better than I thought he'd be." I don't know that there's anybody, certainly nobody on the offensive line, certainly nobody in the tight end room. Nico Collins, I already knew he was good.
Damian Pierce looked good at the very end of the season for, other than the one run versus the Patriots, it was really the one time all year where you thought, oh, look at that. That's the old Damian Pierce.
Yeah.
And he showed up in a meaningless game at the very end of the season.
I think the most important thing is you're not, like, it doesn't feel like CJ Stroud took a step forward.
Right.
That's the biggest one. You know, that's the biggest one. So I think there's a big part of DeMeco that looked at that. If I had to guess, it looked at that side of the ball and said, man, there's all kinds of development going on over here. There's none of that going on the offensive side of the ball.
You know, Bill Lazor's a guy that he's been with CJ the whole time. He's kind of, it feels like almost a co-quarterbacks coach with Gerard Johnson. Mm-hmm. The thing with Bill, because I've been clamoring for a veteran guy who's already been an offensive coordinator, I know that people around the league really respect him for his mind and his intelligence. And full disclosure, I was teammates with Bill Lazor. I don't talk with him about football, about anything, because I don't... You know how I feel about that. I never want any of my friends who are coaches getting the old, like, this guy's a mole or something. So I try to be hands-off as much as possible. And I don't think the fan base might necessarily have an appetite for it. He's been an offense coordinator four different times, and never for more than 2 years. But the last three stays were with coaches who were, it was Philbin, it was Nagy. Those are offensive-minded guys, and they weren't long for their spots. And then, Marvin Lewis, which it was in his last couple years there in Cincinnati. But I would imagine that DeMeco is... And Nick are talking about Bill as a potential offensive coordinator. Whether they feel awesome about it or would rather look elsewhere, I don't know. But that is a veteran guy who's in the building. And you just never know from the outside looking in how eye to eye did he see with Bobby Slowick? And as of yet, at least, it's notable that Bill Lazor was retained while other guys were let go.
Well, I think it's you're right. I think it's notable that the only one who was let go was Chris Strouser. You know
because the assistant offensive line coach as of yet is still on the team.
He's still It was reported on Friday that he was fired. Cole Popovich, that he was fired as well. But he is that report was corrected. So the only. the only assistant, the only position coach that that's not coming back as of right now is Chris Strauser, the offensive line coach, which tells me that, you know, obviously the offense was viewed as a failure under Bobby Slowik by the standard they were holding. By definition, it was. He was fired. He was in charge of the offense.
Yeah.
If we're pinpointing a part of the offense that was viewed as the most culpable out of all of them, it would appear just based on the team's behavior that it was the offensive line, which passes the eye test to me, I would say.
Yeah, and I wonder what this means. I think the best news Kenyon Green could have gotten was that they got a new offensive line coach, because at the very least, they're going to want to take another look at Kenyon Green to see how he operates with a different offensive line coach and a different offensive coordinator. But I would hope this year, I'm going to be really, really shocked and disappointed if they treat Kenyon Green this year the way they did last year, which is day one starter. Yep, there he is. He's our guy.
He's back.
It cannot be that way.
No.
Give him another chance, by all means. He's got potential physically. It's just, I can't go out there and have them think, oh, yep, Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green, those are our guys, slam dunk. And Shaq Mason, I think there's no way in hell, obviously, that you can look at it. Those interior offensive linemen have to be in extreme tryout mode unless they're a free agent brought in from elsewhere. Trey Smith for the Chiefs, for instance, is one of the best free agents available this offseason.
Yeah, I think there's more change coming. To me, the only spot that's nailed down on the offensive line is left tackle. Laremy Tunsil is going to be your starting left tackle. And then beyond that, it's, to me, I would let whoever the new offensive coordinator and the new O-line coaches are, let them come in and bury their head in the film for 2 weeks and form their own opinions on it.
I think there is, if Titus Howard embraces it, and with a new offensive coordinator and new offensive line coach, I think if they put Titus Howard at left guard day one, I'd be cool with that. I'm talking about the younger guys or the guys who vastly underperformed. I think Titus needs to clean up some of his technique, but he also did some really good things as a guard. And it's nice having a veteran dude who's just he's massive, and as a guard, he's a really good athlete. As a tackle, he's an okay athlete. As a guard, he's a really good athlete, that I could get excited about that. And Laremy Tunsil has showed a renewed or a new commitment to trying to be a better run blocker. I would imagine that whichever offensive coordinator they bring in, hopefully Laremy Tunsil sticks with that same attitude.
Well, and I think, too, the O-line coach, you know, the guy who's getting his hands in the clay every day with that group, needs to be somebody who's a motivator also, who gets the best out of Laremy.
I remember watching when we had combined practices with the Broncos way back in the day. Texans hosted the Broncos. I remember watching Alex Gibbs Sr. at the time just have a shouting match the entire practice with one of their veteran offensive linemen. I can't remember who it was, but it was very clear that Alex Gibbs Sr. was not giving this guy any kind of extra special treatment because he was a 10-year vet. He was just a crusty old football coach.
This is those old Bronco lines you were saying? It was a Broncos practice? I wonder if it was Tom Nalen. Was it Tom Nalen?
No. It wasn't Tom Nalen. It was an offensive tackle. It might have been Zimmerman or somebody. I don't remember who it was.
Okay, okay.
Nalen would get... He would argue with Nalen, too.
Yeah.
It was just... That's another beautiful thing about the NFL. That people might, if you heard reports of that, like, oh, the offensive line coach was arguing with Tom Nalen, it's no big deal. If you got crusty old football coaches in the NFL, almost want their crusty old veterans to be the kind of guys that they can get in a shouting match with. It's a cool dynamic. As long as you've earned it. As long as you've earned the ability to have the shouting match.
Okay, did I paint the offensive line with too broad a brush when you asked me, did anybody improve noticeably on offense? Come on, Sean, Texter says. Jarrett Patterson played better than you thought he would. Okay. I mean, he's probably outplayed his draft slot, I guess.
The thing with Patterson was, I thought he did some good things that can show some promise, and especially if they end up going to more of a, you know, power running, inside zone based type scheme, that I think Patterson could do it. But there were also times where Patterson and Scruggs just, they simply weren't athletic enough to do some of the things that Bobby Slowik was asking him to do. I think there's promise there with Jarrett Patterson, but I felt the same way about him last year.
That's the thing. So, okay, thank you. Yeah, like, he played 8 games before he got hurt last year, and he was okay, and he played this year, and he was okay. Like, he wasn't It got better with him at center than it was earlier in the year with Juice at center.
Yeah, there's no part. I'm intrigued by Jarrett Patterson, but there's no part of me that thinks, yep, there he is. He's the starter no matter what at center next year.
Yeah, and just for purposes of comparison to the texter, like, no, we were comparing it to how Seth and I felt about the noticeable improvement or overachievement of several guys on defense. Like, Jarrett Patterson and Henry Toa were drafted within a couple dozen draft spots of each other. They were both rookies in 2023, and they both performed admirably while they were in there as rookies for what they were. Jarrett Patterson was the same player this year that he was last year. Henry Toa took a major step forward this year in year two. Like, he was for most of the time, a good, solid rotational linebacker in the NFL who made a lot of plays. You know, like, I think his improvement was far more noticeable than, you know, whatever was going on with Jarrett Patterson. So that's
But I will accept that as I think if you know what, if that guy hadn't said, "Come on, Sean," he might have received that differently. I'm open to arguments for Jarrett Patterson 100%. So maybe is that the one guy that we can say, "All right, look, I actually feel better," or I feel like there's promise and hope for him. Blake Fisher as well. I would say Blake Fisher, he is not ready to be the full-time starting right tackle based on how he played this year, but he was a rookie that I looked at as a two-year project, and I think he played pretty much the way I thought he probably would if he would go in.
Yeah.
So there's definitely something there. He could turn into a good offensive tackle. I don't know if I would say, "Oh wow, yeah, he blew me away and we're ready to go at right tackle. He has to start at right tackle."
Right. And again, for purposes of comparison for what you and I are talking about, the degree of improvement that we're talking about, because we're talking about player development here on defense versus offense. And yeah, no, Blake Fisher looks like a promising young prospect. I would say Cade Stover looks like a promising young prospect. Kalen Bullock and Kamari Lassiter are making plays in playoff games.
Yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, there was just better development going. And, you know, and some of that's the individual guy, too. It's not all about the coaching. But, yeah, that's all we're saying. But, yeah, when you lead in with, "Come on, Sean," like, that's, you lead in with condescension, man. You're poisoning the water with me, okay?
That's almost as bad as "You do know."
Yeah, it is a little like that. It's in the same neighborhood. Getting a lot of questions on here about the OC position and free agency. Seth, you think Juice has a chance to take over at center again? I think everything's on the board other than left tackle.
Yeah, and I do. It does depend to what kind of scheme they want to run, and I don't think that either of those centers right now are. They don't have the athletic traits that people really look for if you're going to run an outside zone-based system. And a lot of that just depends on what's the guy that comes in. If they want to be maulers, and I feel like they do have more of a chance and ability to be maulers if Titus Howard rounds it, like, really commits to playing guard. And if they brought in a guy like Trey Smith from the Chiefs, yeah, this could end up being kind of an old mauling offensive line if they're coached up well.
Who would you pick right now? The Texans are leaving it up to Seth Payne to pick the next offensive coordinator among the guys, among the pool that the names that have been tossed around over the last couple days.
I'd say Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
Chip Kelly, and it's got to come with... it's got to come with like a really big payday, enough to entice him to stick it out with the Texans as an offensive coordinator. If he gets a job offer next year as a head coach in the NFL, but it's a place like, you know, that's got its flaws and blemishes, it doesn't feel like the right fit for him, he's going to say, "No, I'm going to stay here and make my $10 million as the offensive coordinator of the Texans."
Yeah, I wonder how he's viewed as a head coaching candidate by ownerships around the NFL right now. He had the 3 years in Philly where he did some things that were pretty innovative, but there were also some things he did that kind of outside the box that really kind of ran his defense into the ground a little bit.
Well, there was that, and he's improved on that. He understood as he was in the NFL that he had to slow the tempo down a little bit. He's not as up-tempo as he used to be because he understands what a bind that puts you in defensively. I think the big thing in Philly was there was a little bit of a Bill O'Brien element where man, when he really started to take too much control over personnel, that he wasn't suited to that. And that was more of an issue than anything else. I don't think the bloom is off his rose as an offensive mind.
No.
Given that he did just, walloped Notre Dame as an offensive coordinator. You can say all you want about, yeah, but look at all the talent he had. Yeah. When he's going against other teams that had lots of talent and they're in the biggest game of the year, they looked awesome offensively. So he's got the prior relationship with DeMeco. He can be a head coach of the offense, that old Wade Phillips dynamic. It's a good question. Are you really genuinely in danger of him getting plucked away after 1 year because he's going to be such a glimmering offensive a head coach candidate? I think if Stroud looks awesome, then yes, you would be.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of owners out there that say, well, we've got a high draft pick. Look at what he did with C.J. Stroud. He's already been a head coach before. Makes sense. Let's do it.
Yeah, I think so, too. That said, it would be really cool to get him this coming season. I'm not worried about the money part of it. Reportedly, Tampa Bay wants to take a look at Chip Kelly as their OC. Man, what a story that was, the Liam Cohen stuff late last week. We'll get into that later in the show. His name came up for Jacksonville. I'd have a hard time seeing him go there. That would mean Liam Cohen probably is not calling plays, which I have a hard time thinking that's going to be the case.
I think Chip Kelly, if he were going to make it purely on football, let's say he's going to be an offensive coordinator in the NFL. You mentioned those three teams right there. I feel like it's a slam dunk for the Texans
too.
Because
yeah.
if there's one thing we know about successful coaches, they tend to be pretty cocky, and that's a good thing. And I think that Chip Kelly looks at C.J. Stroud, Joe Mixon, Nico Collins, and then maybe the potential for some of the offensive linemen, and he watches the film from the Texans and thinks, yeah, I can do something with this. I'm Chip mother bleeping Kelly.
Yep.
I can do this.
Yep. Last text, and then we'll hit acknowledge me. We got to get to acknowledge me. Texter says Kelly's making $2 million a year at Ohio State. Cool. The Texans have that kind of money. Bobby was making $1.5 million, according to Front Office Sports. So
yeah, I guess I don't know if that person's making that as a point that yeah, it'd be easy to get him for more money. Jim Knowles just left for $3 million a year. Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator for Ohio State, yesterday took the job at Penn State for $3 million a year. The NFL money for somebody like Chip Kelly is. It's going to be more than what they're going to pay him at Ohio State.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the money. Like, I think the McNairs are motivated to spend. They want to get this right. You know, they know where they are right now in their sort of gestation cycle as a Super Bowl contender.
I got really excited when I saw Jim Knowles go to Penn State. For one, he's on the Seth Payne coaching tree.
Yep,
he was a linebackers coach at Cornell all 4 years that I was there. So I take all credit for everything he's ever done, basically. And
two.
Yes, him. Because a lot of people were saying, "Well, why would Chip Kelly leave? If he's just going to be an offensive coordinator again, why would he leave?" Well, money. A, B, he might. I think like a lot of college coaches right now might be thinking, "Oh boy, I kind of miss the NFL where I didn't have to worry about kowtowing to 19-year-old millionaires and agents and everything else in the transfer portal."
Yep.
Yeah, it's a more the NFL now is more like the old college football. Than college football is now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. You just go coach, you know. All right, let's do our acknowledge me's. We do it every Monday at about this time. We went deep on Bobby Slowick, but that's a topic worth going deep on. We'll dig into it more later in the show. We'll go through some of the other candidates, too. Acknowledge me. We acknowledge the big performances from over the weekend. When I say a name, Ben hits the old
acknowledge me.
Roman Reigns. We'll start with Saquon Barkley.
Acknowledge me!
15 carries, 118 yards. Boy, it felt like a lot more than 118 yards. Three touchdowns. Probably because on the Eagles' very first play from scrimmage, down 3-0 in the first quarter, this happened.
First play from scrimmage for Philly. They mark him down at the 40-yard line. Toss it to the left side. Barkley's got a lane to the 50, to the 45. Spin move to the 40. Barkley's still going. Zigzags inside. 20, 15, 10. Touchdown, Saquon Barkley! He is incredible! 60 yards spinning away from would-be tacklers!
Yeah, and he would go on 15 carries. So he averaged about 8 yards a carry, three touchdowns. Pretty much automatic when you give it to him down near the goal line down there.
Yeah, I think that, I was chatting with Drew Hodgson, my old teammate, last night about, so what would you call Kellen Moore's offense? And I'm like, well, they do whatever they can to utilize Jalen Hurts and his ability to it's a hodgepodge of a bunch of different things. It's really hard to just pin it down to what they do. I think Jalen Hurts, I think his decision making in when to extend plays, when to throw the ball away, but then to also take those opportunities to AJ Brown and elsewhere. You see what a difference I think having an offensive coordinator like Kellen Moore compared to last year was. That it just he doesn't have to operate like Tom Brady. He doesn't have to operate like Cam Newton. He can just be Jalen Hurts. Mm-hmm. And the defense's ability, the Eagles' defense's ability to play bend but don't break, to a point where it was scary as hell if you're an Eagles fan, the way you're watching the Commanders just drive down the field. But they do all those things that when you're playing bend but don't break, that you got to do. You play good defense in the red zone, and you force turnovers.
Yep.
And they were surgical with forcing those turnovers.
Oh, yeah.
They've got the peanut punch down to a science. And that ended up being the huge difference in the game, was really not just turnovers, but turnovers in the Commanders' territory.
Xavier Worthy.
Acknowledge me.
We acknowledge Xavier Worthy, rookie wide receiver for the Chiefs, for his 6 catches for 85 yards for a touchdown. He, like he was in the Texans game, at wide receiver, we know Kelce went nuts in the Texans game, but as far as wide receivers go, he's clearly established himself as the favorite in this postseason of Patrick Mahomes. Hat tip to the Chiefs for thieving the pick to get Xavier Worthy in the first round from the Buffalo Bills, who then said, no, we're cool, just hang in, and taking Keon Coleman 5 picks later. Keon Coleman, 1 catch, 12 yards in the game. Yet, like, Xavier Worthy was a legit difference maker in this game, and the Buffalo Bills spoon-fed him to the Kansas City Chiefs.
And I think if there's one thing that just jumps out at you as you're watching the Bills' offense versus the Chiefs' offense, it's the Chiefs have speed on the field. A lot of it in the form of Xavier Worthy, where the Bills don't just have that same speed. And it's a lot of other factors in that game, obviously. But the Bills, you got to be frustrated as hell if you're a Bills fan, because their GM last year basically made some comment about how, like, it's hard to just go out and grab yourself, draft yourself somebody as good as various electrifying receivers. Well, you were in position to do it.
Yeah.
You were in position to do it right then. You could have had Xavier Worthy.
Can you imagine if you swapped Xavier Worthy and Keon Coleman in that game yesterday?
Yeah, Keon Coleman did some good things, but it was all the stuff that you look at why a guy that's as big and strong as him can be valuable, but he's not beating anybody with his speed. He bulldozed his way to a first down here, but when Josh Allen saw him one-on-one versus a really good cornerback and tried to throw a fade to him in the end zone, it was a throwaway play. He's not Xavier Worthy.
Yeah. Texans, if you're paying attention, that 25th pick overall, that's been a sweet spot for wide receivers right there. Late 20s, early 30s.
These pendulums swing, though. I think that happens. Teams are getting really good wide receivers in the late first and then into the second round over the last couple years. Eventually, people start just drafting those same wide receivers a lot higher.
Yeah, we'll see. I haven't looked at anything with this. That's been the nice thing about the Texans being relevant. I've not looked at any mock drafts. I've watched a bleep ton of college football, but yeah.
The way it's kind of played out just from casually perusing the mock drafts is that it looks to be that kind of year where the wide receivers are more back end of the first round on into the second round, so it might work out really well for the Texans.
Amen Thompson.
Acknowledge me!
Triple-double on Saturday night against the Cavs. 23 points, 14 rebounds, 10 assists. And it's becoming very evident. Look, first of all, this is a great discussion to have, that the Rockets have this many young pieces that people are excited about. That there's actual depth with the young pieces. They've been missing Jabari Smith Jr. for a while. It doesn't matter. They've slid Cam Whitmore in there to get some minutes. They've moved Amen Thompson into the starting lineup. By the way, do not move him out of the starting lineup. Leave him in the starting. When Jabari comes back, Jabari can come off the bench. Because I think Alperen Şengün has the best chance of being an all-star on this team, because he was so close last year. And he's putting up numbers. Been doing it a little longer. Jalen Green is the one they've been trying to build around, and Jalen Green's had a nice season. Jalen Green has He's played better than I thought he would. He's certainly lived up to the deal they gave him. Amen Thompson's the best player on this team. He's the best player on this team. He's the most impactful player on this team. I said it a week or two ago, Seth, that they disperse the Rockets and let the rest of the league cherry pick their players in a draft. Amen Thompson would be the first one drafted out of all of them.
I think that some of the arguments we saw from the NBA writers about why the Rockets should trade for Draymond Green or Steph Curry or both of them, and in doing so trade away a good chunk of their future draft picks, whatever. They're not all their own. They're not all Rockets draft picks. One of the arguments was, well, until Jabari Smith Jr. comes back, you gotta still be able to play defense, and Draymond Green would help in that regard. They're the 2 seed in the West. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. They're doing just fine. And when Jabari Smith Jr. comes back, it's going to be a shot in the arm for a team that hasn't looked like they really are desperate for a shot in the arm right now. I am A-okay with rolling with what they got right now.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, the other thing that a guy like Draymond or Steph would bring, you know, they bring the experience in the leadership. The experience part, although Fred VanVleet was on a championship team in Toronto. You know, then you know Dylan Brooks has played a lot of playoff games. I get that. Steven Adams is on this team. The championship experience is one thing. Just like this does not feel like a rudderless team that needs an injection of leadership as well. Like
they've already constructed in that manner.
Yeah.
They've got veterans that they feel good about as tone setters, yep. And then they've got a bunch of young studs that they hoped would develop. And lo and behold, those young studs are developing very, very well. I think it's a rare situation where so many of the things that they've worked on doing the last couple of years are genuinely coming to fruition,
mm-hmm.
that you almost kind of forget to let go of the feeling that, like, well, we'll see if this works out. No, it's okay. It is working out.
It's too good
to
be true.
This is what they planned for.
Yeah.
This is the way that they hoped that it would look. You'd love to be shooting the ball better, but by and large, this is what they planned for.
They play the Celtics tonight, man, in Boston. Like, they've been beating good teams. They beat Cleveland on Saturday. They beat Cleveland here Wednesday last week. They beat the Grizzlies a couple times. Like, this is fun, man. So in Boston tonight, big test for the Rockets. All right, we're up against it, so two quick acknowledgements. I'm going to acknowledge the Cougs.
Acknowledge
their double overtime win at Kansas, where they had a 0.4% win probability with 18 seconds left in the first overtime. But the Jayhawks missed two free throws. Emmanuel Sharp hits a three. They steal the inbound. Wilson hits a three. And they send it to a second overtime, and they win 92-86. So acknowledging the Cougs. And we've talked about Billy Wagner, but it's not official till we acknowledge him.
Acknowledge me!
Making the Hall of Fame. Good job, Billy Wagner.
Was it? Okay. We've talked about it, but he hasn't been in acknowledgement yet.
He hasn't been blessed by Roman Reigns yet. All right, so there you go. Those are our acknowledgements for this week. Speaking of the Astros, all right, so we'll take a listen to Dana Brown. What do we think the chances are that Alex Bregman is back based on Dana Brown's comments? And we'll hear from Jose Altuve as well. One thing that all of you are suggesting, if Bregman comes back, is very evident, will not happen. We'll tell you what that is coming up next.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge. Trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, the Night Stalker. These names are infamous, but do you really know what drove them to kill?
In Mind of a Serial Killer, we don't just tell you the story, we break down the psychology behind it.
Follow and listen to Mind of a Serial Killer, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Karam Injury Lawyer Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. I would say Ken Rosenthal is one of the more informed insiders in baseball. Here's Ken Rosenthal was doing sort of a roundtable this weekend on MLB TV, and he made a prediction about the Astros and Alex Bregman.
Their fans want Alex Bregman back, and the Astros are trying. I don't know how far it's going to get, but if I had to bet right now, I would bet the Astros in this negotiation. Ooh. Even though they've made their offer, it was 6 years, $156 million. Jim Crane offered that to Bregman. But if they come up a little bit and he doesn't really have anything that he likes as much, now he supposedly has long offers along those lines. But again, it's where do you want to play?
All right. So Ken Rosenthal, that feels like a more of a guess than an informed prediction. Right now,
I know. Yeah, he almost said. Did he use the word guess? I think he said. I would guess.
Yeah,
that it is anybody's guess right now. I think every media member that's reported on Bregman's supposed offers out there, they almost say it with a little bit of a side eye. It feels like, all right, there's reports that he's got, but there's no numbers attached to any of these reports. So much of this feels like Scott Boras, the agent for Alex Bregman, is still running the show, but it feels like Boras probably vastly underestimated what Bregman's market was going to be like. And look, I usually don't blame agents for much because ultimately they work for the client. But man, Bregman fired his previous agent to hire Scott Boras specifically. They've been talking about this for a couple years now, and I gotta think that Bregman got advice that, yeah, there's better deals out there than this deal the Astros gave you. And now he's just sitting out there twisting in the wind. I'm trying to keep my ego out of this. And because I put myself in Dana Brown's shoes. And there's just that part of me that says, all right, sure. But listen, you can't come back here and get the same offer just because nobody else gave you anything more. The deal has changed. We're not going to be the high bidder on you. When not only did you not use, like, you actively stiff-armed us. So for Bregman to come back and just accept the offer that was already on the table, it'd be one thing if it was 2 weeks into free agency, if he'd gone out and kind of seen and tested what the market was. But the Astros have already made extreme moves since then to make up for his absence. It can't be at the same price unless there's also a Paredes trade in the mix and they end up getting an outfielder with that Paredes trade as Bregman comes back in. But it just can't be as simple as, oh, nice to have you back, Alex. Because zero of it has to do with Alex Bregman liking the Astros. It's like if he comes back and accepts the high offer because he sat out there unwanted for so much of free agency, there's no loyalty or sentimentality on Alex Bregman's side of things.
No. And yet if they did that, if they said, okay, well, the deal's changed, it's 4 years, 100 right now or something like that, I could totally see Alex Bregman taking one of those Correa 1 year, you know, opt out, prove it deals somewhere else, just because he knows there'll be something. I mean, he's never going to be poor. You know, like it's, I could see that being you know, knowing how chippy Bregman gets, you know?
Well, you know, and okay, so if we take our own pettiness out of it, because that's the petty side of me.
Yeah.
The baseball side of me would say, all right, depending on how we can rejigger the infield and outfield, however we plan to use Altuve, you're a better offensive team if you have Bregman and your acquisitions from the offseason. We are, by the way, remember, we did lose a Kyle Tucker.
Yeah.
So there's that part of me, but how can we make it work? And then it goes back into, all right, do we trade away one of our recent acquisitions, or do we I don't think Altuve's not going to be an everyday left fielder. It's an option to use when you're moving guys around, but I just can't look at that as a viable option.
I think you're talking yourself into it if you're the Astros, or you're just a fan who's talking yourself into it. You accept that there's going to be a lot of churn defensively, and you trust that the organization has the resources to handle that, to know what's best analytically, load management, all of those things. Like you accept that there's going to be that. What comes with that is that you become a better team offensively than you were going to be before Alex Bregman re-entered the chat. Like, you, 1 through 7, and if Chaz can refine some semblance of what he was 2 years ago, 1 through 8, you got some pretty capable Major League Baseball hitters there when everybody's healthy. So there's that. The contract part of it, I think the contract part of it, there's no way it'll be painless if you bring Bregman back at the deal you offered him this coming season. It's just, I know they traded Presley. They had yesterday. They had to pay $5.5 million to the 14. So you cleared out $8.5 million. You're back below the competitive balance tax now, but not by a whole lot. If you bring Bregman in at $26 million a year, you're going to be paying a pretty decent chunk of tax. And you're, if Crane still cares about the tax and how much tax he pays, your flexibility at the deadline to go get a big salary is diminished. But I think in future years, with all this dead money coming off the books this year, it does make it easier to have a Bregman contract on the books moving forward. Like, you can squint and see where, all right, the defensive stuff, okay, that's you know, that's a churn, but we're better offensively. The contract stuff, man, it's going to hurt this year, but Abreu, Montero, Fromber probably is somewhere else next year. That's a lot, yeah, of space to fit a $26 million salary in. We'll be okay there. And then I think the upside to it, like I mean, unless there's people out there that are angry with Bregman that it even made it to this point, that he even looked somewhere else, that he was the, yeah, guy in the meme walking with his girlfriend who was peeking back at that other girl's butt. Uh-huh. Unless there's Astro fans who are angry about that, I think by and large, if Bregman were to come back, he would, the fan base would be completely injected with excitement over this.
Yeah, know? No, I think it would be, it reminds me of back in the day when John Riggins held out, and Riggins held out for the entire year.
Yeah.
And when he came back, he said something like, well, what can I say? I'm broke.
Riggo.
And I think because he's Riggo, people were cool with it. Bygones are bygones. Yeah, I think bygones would be bygones. I don't want to work too hard to try to fit a square peg into a round hole for reasons of, it wouldn't even be sentimentality. They value him as a leader. Jose Altuve wants him. Look, Altuve is not wired the same way that LeBron James is or anybody else when they want to be the GMs of their own team at all. This is way out of character for Altuve to be as vocal about this. But you do also, you got to be really, really careful when you start letting your best players also start to be the GMs of your team.
Yeah.
Yes, you weigh Altuve's opinion and you value it and all of that, but you almost got to detach it from the actual decision making.
Yeah.
Because there's, yes, leadership is one of Bregman's traits, but there's just like any other athletic trait, it's one trait. It's not the be-all, end-all of exactly, you know, why a guy should be on the team at any price.
Yep. One more from Dana Brown here. For those of you saying, move Bregman to shortstop, not so fast.
I love watching Bregman at third base, so I can't imagine me putting Bregman or having Joe put Bregman in any other position other than third base. I mean, that's his home. He puts on clinics when he's playing third base. I mean, he's just as special as anybody, gold glove there. And so I can't picture him playing anywhere else but third base.
Yeah.
So, or you could interpret that as, okay, he's not saying the same things about Paredes now, is he? So if I'm Paredes, I'm like, all right, hey guy, hey. Hey, you remember all those nice things you were saying about me, yeah, after you traded
we're
me?
We're new in this relationship, and you're already back with your old girlfriend, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, and Peña, I don't think there's any part of the Astros that are looking at Peña defensively last year and thinking, well, no. The experiment has failed.
Nope. Yeah, move your average to below average fielders around a little. Like, don't move gold glove guys from places they've won gold gloves.
Right, you know? Well, and with Peña, because I know immediately a lot of people are saying, yeah, but his run value last year, this, that. Yeah, he had a weird but young player type of season last year. He was still making a lot of incredible throws and a lot of really impressive throws. He just had all these curious bad errors that were, sometimes it's easier to dismiss a bad error than it is the run of the mill stuff. Mm-hmm. Because, all right, whatever he's working through or messing with or whatever it might be, it's something that I think he's going to grow out of and work out of. I'm not worried about it from that standpoint. I think just like with everything Dana Brown said about Bregman at third base, I think he probably also feels like, yeah, now, look, we really like Pena at shortstop.
Hey, if you want to go to Vegas and you're wondering how you can do that, all you got to do is tune into Sports Radio 610 for an hour a day on the Odyssey app. It's live, rewind, or show podcast. It doesn't matter which method you're tuning in. Just listen to Sports Radio 610 or any participating station on the Odyssey app for 60 minutes to earn your daily entry, and you and three friends could be wheels up to Vegas in March with an extra $5K in your pockets for the ultimate college basketball tournament experience. Just log in and listen now on the Odyssey app for your chance to win this national contest. A quick reminder as well, we're going to be on Radio Row this time next week. Seth and I will be on the row in New Orleans. Flight by Yingling is our presenting sponsor. We're really thankful for them. Low T Center sponsoring us going there as well. We really appreciate that. We have our hot seat there. Exclusive Furniture is sponsoring our hot seat on Radio Row. And then Mokiram Injury Lawyers, they are sponsoring our live stream. So we thank all of them for helping send us to New Orleans next week. Up next, a Pettycast preview from a former Texan on field last night at the AFC title game. That is next.